Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we are having a ball here in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan. The word is boycott, boycott, boycott. And once again, we are being successful. We are being heard all around the world. People want to know exactly why we are boycotting all of Whirlpool products. And when I say all of Whirlpool products, I mean exactly that. We are right in the middle of something that's so tremendous that nobody could quite understand. The word is boycott, boycott, boycott. That means boycott all Whirlpool products. Let's go for KitchenAid, Maytag, whatever, Amanda, all the products that you could think of before you buy a washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator. Make sure you ask who made this product. I tell you, we are making a major impact on Whirlpool. But we got to continue this fight. We cannot fight this battle alone. Also, in Florida, we just got the word that Florida itself, the boycott is going extremely strong. We are battling from all angles. We are doing things that's so incredible that people begin to notice that we are doing the things that need to be done. Also, November the 5th, we want every citizen in Benton Harbor, Michigan, to go to the polls, and we want you to take your cousin, your niece, take your mother and father. We want you to take everybody to the polls. We got this income tax, and I recently just wrote an article about it, and I want you to make sure that people understand how important this is to the residents of Benton Harbor. We're going to pull in $2.5 million. We are $500,000 in the red. So we are going to, matter of fact, no longer be in the red. My article reads like this: positive news from Benton Harbor. And you know, living in Benton Harbor, we do not get a lot of positive news. It says a city income tax would help restore the city of Benton Harbor. A Michigan-based research group, Citizen Research Council of Michigan, says city income tax appear to work best in a small city like Benton Harbor. The income tax works extremely well for cities with a population between 2,000 and 11,000. A new income tax will provide an infusion of a lot of corporate revenue to support our city. Marcus Muhammad, an outspoken city commissioner and councilman, spoke during a meeting of the city commission legislative committee, which endorsed the tax plan. Muhammad said that the committee set the tax rate on corporations and residents at 1% and on non-residents who worked in the city at 0.5%. Muhammad also said several businesses that received tax break would not have time to pay, would not have to pay the city income tax because they would have to pay because there are no loopholes. These businesses include Whirlpool, Atlanta Automotive, and 29 other corporations who don't pay any tax, and many other companies who do not pay taxes. He said that city income tax would also include money from the TV revenue generated from the senior PGA when they have the golf tournament here in 2014. Every golfer at golf here that takes home a check will have to leave some of that money with Benton Harbor. And it's been scheduled for 2014, 16, and 18. Also, the president of Whirlpool, Jeff Fettick, who makes over $35 million a year, will have to pay a 1% of his income. Harvard Shore, senior PGA, including television personnel, each and every one of these wealthy individuals who draws a check will have to pay. The city council voted 6 yes, 2 no's, 1 abstain. The city commission adopted an ordinance approving the tax to be placed on the ballot come November. The citizens of Benton Harbor will vote on whether or not they want to enact the city income tax. The campaign for the pageant begins now. I, Edward Pinckney, Reverend Edward Pinckney, support the income tax to take back our city and restore it. I am backing this legislation because it is high time that the corporation and the wealthy pay at least some of their fair share. So those of you who are out there, we need your help. We need your help to help pass this tax. It's important not only for us, but for everybody around the state to show what we can do. Like I said, it will generate $2.5 million. That would take us completely out of the red. So those of you out there who want to come to Benton Harbor and help us, take people to the polls, whatever you can do, we need you. We need you like never before, because this must pass. So those of you out there, come to Benton Harbor and help us. Let's listen to a little Martin Luther King. You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we have a wonderful, wonderful show today. I have my good friend General Baker, who's going to be on the line today, but unfortunately, he haven't made it yet. But until he comes on, we're going to have my other good friend, my guy, Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney, and as usual, listening to every word. And if you don't mind, I've just come from a visit from Lynn Stewart in Carswell, Texas, in Fort Worth, and Carswell Federal Medical Center. And we discussed a very important issue that's on everyone's mind today. This is the issue of the United States attacking Syria. And as Lynn said, it is a very confusing situation, as you have heard on the major media. But there are certain basic things that we know that are not confusing. And it wasn't so long ago, and these not confusing things we discussed, it wasn't so long ago that President Lyndon B. Johnson said, if the Vietnamese don't go to the conference table in Paris and surrender, they will bomb them into the Stone Age. And 95% of the American joint session of Congress stood and cheered, and 95% of the American people stood and cheered, and they bombed Vietnam. And they destroyed the very earth Vietnam is on. They tried to destroy the food supply with Agent Orange and other chemicals that have destroyed the earth beyond use in any future in thousands of years. This crime that the American government is guilty of, and along with destroying the earth, they destroyed women and children, civilians and soldiers without regard to their age or whether they were involved in the war. And then we move forward when this country, and they talked about they were going to save the Vietnamese, and now we all know it was about conquering territory to send jobs and rob their natural resources of, and to do to them what they are doing to us, steal our homes, our cities, our future, our pensions, etc. And then not so long after that, this same government said they were going to save the people of Iraq. And what did they do? They bombed it. They broke international law again, as they had done in Vietnam, by using weapons, depleted uranium. They used white phosphorus, all against international law. And what did they do? They stole the gold of the original European attack on the Middle East to steal gold and land. But this time, it's black gold, the new regenerated attack on the Middle East. And President Bush told us it was the Crusades again. And sooner after that, they told us they were going to save the women of Afghanistan. And they bombed and tried to destroy Afghanistan. And the people of Afghanistan are still fighting back, because it is not about saving the women of Afghanistan to go halfway around the world to save women of color. People believed that this was the aim, which the Americans sold out to the Northern Alliance, to the warlords, and the women are worse off now than they've ever been. It was about a pipeline and the price that was going to be charged for this pipeline. And they went to Libya to save the people. We know what happened, and now they're telling us they're going to Syria to save the people, because they said, and we know, we don't know what happened in Libya. We don't know who sent those chemical weapons, but we do know when Saddam Hussein was charged with using chemical weapons, we knew who gave him those chemical weapons, and we know who helped him deliver those chemical weapons to the Kurds. And I say all of that to say, we know that the Americans are lying. And Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry, I don't know what's happening in Syria, but I know Secretary of State Kerry is a liar. He lied about throwing away his medals, and it was someone else's medals, and he lied about everything he was doing. And now they're telling us they're going to Syria. These same liars who have lied about every aspect of their life, and I'm going to include Mr. President Obama, who told us one thing before he's elected, and Phil told us something else after he's elected. I think they call that a lie. So what we do know is they are liars, and we can bet that they are lying again, because we know how Assad got the chemical weapons. We know who supported Assad in the Middle East for their own efforts. That's the American government. We know who had disappearing camps on behalf of the American, where they would take you and put you in prison and torture you. This is Assad. And if it doesn't do anything but tell you, no good deed goes unpunished. The Americans helped him put in these camps of torture. They helped him get poison gas to use. They've helped him in every way. And Americans have abused international law time and time and time again. And now they say they're going to attack Syria because they violated international law, and we don't know who violated the international law. While I was on my vigil in Washington, D.C., in front of the White House to support Lynn Stewart, many Syrians came by. And I said, do you know who exploded these chemical weapons? And they said, well, you know the Mossad in the United States. That's Mossad, the Secret Service of Israel, and the United States are involved in everything, and they're everywhere. We don't know. We just know people are dead. And I tell you what, we know in America that whatever America has told you, beginning with the Declaration of Independence, before that was setting up a nation where people were free. They had slavery and genocide of indigenous people here. So now how many lies does a liar have to tell before you know he's a liar? Now that doesn't mean we know all the answers as to why they are going into Syria, but we know it's not for the reasons they said, not for the reasons they told us. And so, in the words of Lynn Stewart, we must look at every situation in our lives with our eyes wide open, paying attention to reality, not listening to the lies, examining everything and re-examining it. And she says if there's one message she would like to put out there is never believe a liar. And when I told her about your campaign out in Benton Harbor, she was so thrilled, and she says, we have a national leader who's talking about a solution, not about a picnic, or not about celebrating a picnic. And so from Carswell Federal Medical Center to you, Reverend Pinckney, comes the good wishes and the thank yous from Lynn Stewart, who has hope because she says out there is not dead yet. And I didn't tell her about the bill that you have worked with and worked on to make the wealthy pay their fair share, to begin to pay their fair share of tax. And I'm going to be out there with you, helping in any way you see fit, helping people to get to the podium or get to the voting booth and stand on the podiums and speak truth against power. Speak truth to power about what must be done to have a decent life and to follow up on Martin Luther King's words about adulthood. Don't let anybody take your adulthood, and you are doing that. We will be with you in thought, and I will be with you in deed to make this thing happen, to stand on our feet and make people understand that we can no longer be treated like children, because we have a leader who is treating us like adults, and we are going to get in line and act like adults and bring justice about, not on our knees, not by celebrating a picnic, but by doing something. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney, from Lynn Stewart, and hey, let me include myself, and Ralph Pointer from Fort Worth, Texas, from Carswell Federal Medical Prison. Thanks again, Reverend.
And thank you so much, Ralph. I want you to make sure that you give Lynn a big hug and a kiss for me, because I tell you, we're out here fighting. We're fighting for her also. We're trying to make sure that we can get her out of there. And we're doing some of the things that need to be done. We're still calling, and which is so, so important that people need to call. Give that number. Do you have a number in front of you where they can call?
I don't have that number in front of me, but I know everybody has a computer. Go to your website. Look at lynnstewart.org, and there are the same three numbers we have been calling. We must call them continually. We know they lied when they said she was getting better, and then the second report comes that shows that the growths are still growing in her lungs, and they say she has 12 months to 18 months to live. That's of 2 months ago. And now they said reapply, which takes 6 months. So we must say expedite. We know she's dying. We want her home for those last few months. And
he's a real political prisoner, and we need to take a stand. We need to do something. I do plan to come to Washington and be with you after this dinner is over, this Danny Glover thing, and I plan to march with you in front of the White House gate. I'm going to be there, and I'm going to bring my wife to make sure she want to come too. So it's going to be pretty interesting. But listen to this. I'm going to let you go after this because I got to bring on my good friend General Baker and Marion Kramer, his wife. I got to do that because those are two individuals that everybody need to hear. But I went to see The Butler, and let me tell you this. The best part of the movie to me was the end when he went and marched with his son and went to jail with him. That was the best part of the movie. Can you believe that?
I didn't see it. I heard so much about it. And if you recommend it, I'll go see it also.
Well, I'm just telling you the best part, the part I like. I like the end of the movie. The end of the movie to me was something that, I could see that happening, you see. And at the end of the movie, he decided that his son was a hero and he wanted to be with him. His son had been to jail over 30 times. And he called himself, his son, all kind of name, a traitor and everything else. But at the end of the movie, he realized that his son was correct and he was wrong. That's what I loved about the movie.
Well, they say there is no crime in not knowing. There's a crime in not learning. So
absolutely.
People learn, it's a great part of the movie. And thank you again, Reverend Pinckney, and I will be listening to every word, right through to the end, to talk about what has happened today.
All right, then, and I will talk to you soon, and God bless you, and have a great day.
Okay, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the program.
All right, now. All right. Now it's time for me to bring on my good friend, my man, my guy, and his wife. We got to bring him in. We got to bring him in. General Baker, are you there?
I'm here, Reverend Pinckney.
How you doing today?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I can hear you real good. Marion Kramer, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney.
I know you just woke up, so we'll let General talk for a little while, then we'll bring you in to talk. General, I know the day is one of them days, but I tell you, this thing is really, really tremendous, and just some of the work that you have done. Let's talk about Drum, how that got started first.
Okay, all right. Well, Reverend Pinckney, Drum, the Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement, was an organization of auto workers in the 1960s. And it got started basically because we decided that it was time for us to turn our efforts towards organizing in the factories. And Reverend Pinckney, I want to tell you, Detroit was such a big auto center. Chrysler had 29 plants in the city of Detroit. They had 66,000 workers in the city of Detroit. It was the largest employer in the entire city. Ford had the Big Rouge complex. GM had Cadillac, Fleetwood. They had the Connor plant. And then we had Bud Wheel. We had Kelsey Hayes, all these other part plants that made parts for auto. So it was really an auto town. The beginnings of Drum basically had its roots in the Detroit Rebellion. When the Detroit Rebellion took place in 1967, Reverend Pinckney,
uh-huh.
And when they called in the Army, the National Guard, the state troopers, and police, and locked down the city. If you got sick, you couldn't go to the doctor after curfew. If you got hungry, you couldn't go get no food. But if you had a badge from Chrysler, Ford, or General Motors, you could get through the police line, the Army line, the National Guard line, and any other line to take your butt to work. And that,
wow.
that little simple act there taught us a fundamental question, even though we learned a lot of things out of rebellion. the one thing we gleaned from that little simple act was the only place that black people had any value to society was at the point of production.
Wow.
So we decided that we had to turn our effort toward organizing inside the plants. And that's when we turned all our efforts, all of our ability to agitate and our ability, you know, to propagandize towards the factories themselves with street rallies and leaflets and things that we did every week. And within a 1 year's time, Drum was born.
Wow.
And that's the roots of Drum, Reverend Pickney. That,
wow.
That's
and people have to understand
the strategy we had to use to try to fight back based on where we looked at, how we looked at, how we were viewed in society itself. Drum lasted for about 4 or 5 years in real intense activity and stuff. We struck many of the plants. We had wildcat strikes every place. We struck against both the union and the company. We put demands on both union and the company, and we took up the battle everywhere we wanted to. We decided that we were going, and they decided to engage us, but we were going to decide the battleground and the place. We decided where we were going to fight, when we were going to fight, how long we were going to fight, and we kept that struggle up. And many changes took place in the auto industry at that time. We was able to slow down production. We were able to enforce them to break down the discrimination inside the shop and begin to hire black workers in various other positions to allow them to get in apprenticeship programs and become skilled tradespeople. They started making black supervisors and general supervisors all over the factory. A lot of changes took place inside the shop in that period of time behind that effort. But we kind of broke the whole ban of Jim Crow inside the shop. Even though a whole lot of it still exists today, we broke the background of it, and we broke it wide open there in 1968 or 69 and the early 70s. So that was our original thrust, Reverend Pickney, and that's why we decided to fight that way. Obviously, things today are quite different. Inside the shop, most of those shops are gone. I see a Chrysler had 66,000 employees in the city of Detroit. Today, they don't have 66,000 people on the entire globe. Most of the auto plants that had 10,000, 7,000, 8,000 employees now are down to only a fraction of what they used to be. The big pole town plants that we now that replaced Cadillac and Fleetwood only hires about 2,000 people, running as many cars as they was running back then, because we're in the midst of this economic revolution, and they have so many robots and computers inside the shops, you know, making the cars, that it don't take but a fraction of the amount of employees that they used to have. So we
wow,
see,
you know, yeah,
see
that,
this,
that is really something. Also, General Bates, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You know, also, you was the first person who you was drafted into the Army, but you refused to get sworn in.
During the Vietnam War, when I had in 1964, they sent me a letter from the draft board telling me to come down to the draft board here in Detroit and to take a physical to see if I was fit for the Army. And it's at that time that I wrote a letter to the draft board explaining to them that I was fit and I was able, but I'm not fighting in this dirty war or these other wars that they're promoting. But when the call is made to free South Africa, when the call is made to free Rhodesia, when the call is made to free Latin America from United Fruit and free Asia from the oil companies, and when the call is made to free Mississippi, Alabama, and South Carolina, and when the call is made to free 12th Street here in Detroit, call for me, and I'll be the first one in line.
And I know that for a fact. I know your history, and I know you're a gallant warrior. And I tell you, I just love you. As a matter of fact, I learned a lot of my stuff from you. You know, when people ask me how come I fight so hard, I just said General Baker. And I can't forget Marion Kramer. You two have stimulated. As a matter of fact, you was here, and you and Marion Kramer both was here in Benton Harbor pushing us to take back control of our city.
That's right. Absolutely.
But
you don't know how much you made up.
I know that you know that.
Yeah.
You also went to Cuba.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. I was fortunate enough, Reverend Pickney, to go to Cuba back in 1964. I went with a group of students, 84 of us all together, who went to Cuba in defiance of the travel ban. You know, in 1963, they put Cuba on the U.S. passport as a country you could not visit. So therefore, we organized ourselves and went in real groups in defiance of this travel ban that they had, Reverend Pickney. So I was fortunate to go. I went to Cuba. We had to go halfway around the globe just to get there. And when we got to Cuba, Cuba was a revolutionary laboratory. I learned so much from Cuba. We played baseball with Fidel Castro. We met with Che Guevara. We met Mohamed Babu, who led the revolution in Zanzibar. We met revolutionary fighters from all over the world who had been wounded and had come to Cuba to convalesce. We met Chickarama from southern Rhodesia and freedom fighters from South Africa, Vietnam, Asia, all over Latin America. And it was really a revolutionary treat in a laboratory. The other thing that was so important for me was that Robert Franklin Williams was in Cuba at that time. Robert Franklin Williams out of Monroe, North Carolina, that had built the rifle club in the midst of his NAACP chapter down in Monroe, North Carolina. And when the Klan got ready to ride through Monroe, North Carolina, they built sandbags and trenches, and they opened fire on the Klan, and the Klan never rode back through Monroe, North Carolina anymore. And he has a real important history, a book called Negroes with Guns, and it's a movie called Negroes with Guns. Him and his wife, Mabel Williams, and his two sons, John and Robert, they really put up a battle down in Monroe, North Carolina, and they was always a beacon of hope and a beacon of freedom for us all the time in the struggle against around armed self-defense, you know, against the racist terror they were faced with down in Monroe, North Carolina.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing too. I tell you, even though doing the uprising, we're going to get back and talk a little bit about Detroit and its emergency management. But I'm going to bring on Marion Kramer.
Certainly.
Yes, she got a history herself. And people, matter of fact, you know, my wife, she just loves some Marion Kramer. And you know, at the dinner, Danny Glover, she wants Marion Kramer to introduce her, and I said, well, I will ask Marion Kramer, will she do that? Because to me, that's really, really important. But Marion Kramer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How you feeling?
Oh, kind of under the weather today, but I'm fine.
Oh.
You know, this weather has been getting next to me.
Well,
but
you know that you're truly a trooper, or truly a warrior, and you know that we really, really love you so much, and your work is so tremendous. Now, I want you to tell us a little bit about you, how you got involved with this, because I know you're truly one of the leaders in Detroit, and I know you also have the Michigan Welfare Right, but you do so much more than just that. You see, I know what you do because I've been with you side by side fighting with you, because I know that you are a extremely great organizer. So let's talk a little bit how you got started in this.
Well, let me say, mine started in the South. During prior to the, the height of the civil rights movement, mine came about because of the ejected situation that we were living in Port Allen, Louisiana, which is West Baton Rouge. Louisiana, and it goes back as far as when I was like 4 years old, and you know, I'm just a real teenager right now.
We know
but
that.
I'm 69 now, when my grandfather had to escape Port Allen because the police was coming after him because of the intimidation by his young white boss who thought that he owned my grandfather as property. And the family got my grandfather out of Port Allen, Louisiana late one night. And a year and a half later, we joined him in Dallas, Texas, with some more family members where I grew up. So, you know, we were back and forth. We kept Highway 80 lit up because we had this huge family in Louisiana, and we had a family in Dallas that roots up from Louisiana also. And my mother was the type of person in our church, you know, Golden Gate Baptist Church, that got us involved in a lot of things, as such as what was happening there in Dallas at the time, you know, around the civil rights movement, when black teachers were told that they couldn't live in a certain area, not purchase home in a certain area like Skyline Heights, Cedar Crest, which is in Oak Cliff, Dallas. If so, they could face the possibility, and possibility of losing their jobs. And one of those teachers that took the helm and took on that challenge was my art teacher from elementary school and her husband. And we were quite proud of her. And my church stood under the late Reverend C.B.T. Smith, stepped forward and began to organize and mobilize people throughout the city of Dallas to support them and for her to have her job back, and that they should have the right to live anywhere they wanted to, which opened up the door to fight around fair housing for us in Dallas, Texas. And so, you know, I was her student. A lot of us were. Because, you know, we were in segregated schools, which is pretty much like what they are now. But at the same time, it opened up a struggle that needed to be opened at that time. So, you know, I had to go that far back in order to lay the foundation to understand that I had been pushed into that type of situation because of my objective situation. And from that, and going to Southern University, it was like the second year when I entered Southern University, when a lot of my cousins and friends had been unable to attend any schools in the state of Louisiana after demonstrating on, from Southern University campus to downtown Baton Rouge, which is the capital of Louisiana, around the injustice of and disenfranchised, of blacks, you know, in the South, in Louisiana. And so they were prevented from, you know, after they participated, from attending any schools in Louisiana. Well, actually, when I heard that, I wanted to be involved, although I was warned by my parents, you don't want to go get involved. And that was a contradiction because they had us involved, but at the same time, they feared what could happen to us knowing what was going on in the South at that time and, you know, the fear that our parents had in their soul, but they still were fighting forward. But I got right involved because it was a lot of the struggle was based there, the headquarters at my aunt's cafe where the strategy and tactics would take place. So automatically I was pulled into that and became a full-time task force workers for the Congress of Racial Equality, which was CORE at the time, and became a task force worker in Monroe, Louisiana, Jonesboro, Louisiana, where the Deacons for Self-Defense was formed around us to try to protect and fight against some of the terrorists that we were living under at the time to try to do that type of work. And eventually I migrated here to Michigan, to Detroit, and got involved, to get stayed involved in housing struggles, you name it, and I can go on and on and on. And then became a part of, I ran into General Baker and Glanton Dydell, who I had to be up late at night because I was working with West Central Organization, and they wanted somebody to help them to print up the news, I mean the leaflets they were putting out, and help to get out drum leaflets and air rum leaflets. And then the students started, we started getting that out, we were getting out to Inner City Boys. And so, you know, became a part of the organizing of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers and its forerunner, the rum movements, and the we had a lot of rum movements. We not only had Dodge Revolutionary rum movements, but we had rum movements in the hospitals, clinics, you name it. Everywhere that fire began to be lit up because of that little newsletter that was going out from different places, rums would grow. And we ended up with a pretty powerful organization here.
Not a pretty powerful, a very, very, very powerful organization. I tell you, you know, they're going to be reading about y'all all through history. I know there's a lot of books being written about y'all, especially about you and General Baker. And I know that people are excited just to know the work that y'all do. And let me jump into Detroit and y'all emergency management. I'll start with you, then I'll let the general finish it up. You go right ahead. Tell me about y'all emergency manager.
Okay, let me say one quick thing. Let me back up and say it. You know, through all that, you know, the National Worker Rights Organization was started right on the heels of the Civil Rights Movement. And so we were a part of that also. And that grew also into the National Worker Rights Union. And it's been, you know, one of the organizations I've been very proud to be a member of for years that fought in the interest and still fight in the interest of that section of the working class, the low-income section of the working class. Now, and that's the dispossessed. Here in Highland Park, one of the cities that ended up with an emergency financial manager back in the early 2000s, under Engler, Governor Engler, Public Act, what is it? It's a Public Act, yeah, 72 Act, depending on what the number was.
Mm-hmm.
We began to understand that fascism began to creep in here, and our democracy was under attack. A lot of people did not listen to us. They thought we were blowing smoke. But we began to experience our city council not having no power, because every decision that they had to basically discuss had something to do with finance of the city, connected with financing of the city. And the person that was appointed at that time by Governor Engler would have to have the last say-so, would have the only say-so on what decision would be made to govern our particular city. The mayor was just reduced to a role of announcing birthdays, who got married, who passed away, and all that type of stuff. The city council didn't even have the right to even meet unless she being Ramona Pearson at that time, allowed them to meet. But they could not make a decision that affect the running of the city of Highland Park without Ramona Pearson giving the okay for that. So, you know, we lost a lot of the properties that Highland Park owned at the time up under that manager. But, we, you know, after a while, because of the water struggle over here that under Michigan Welfare Rights we got involved in, we were able to expose what was happening here. And people finally began to somewhat look at what we were exposing as far as this emergency manager and the effect on people's lives over here. And one of the key jewels that she was trying to, along with her staff, snatch from the city and the people in Highland Park was our water and privatizing our water. giving it over to corporations and at the expense of us and what have you. But once we took that fight up and began to organize, understanding what was happening, and mobilize the people in Highland Park, we were not only in Highland Park, but in some of the surrounding areas like Detroit, Ann Arbor, and what have you, they began to understand that we was not going to give up on that. We even picketed the emergency manager when she was living out in Palmer Park, her family on a Saturday morning, to make sure that the neighborhood understood that they had a water czar living out in that neighborhood and what she was doing in our neighborhood, and that they better watch out because she could do the same thing there for the benefit of the corporation. So, you know, we finally, through, talking and demonstrating and going to Lansing, let folks know what was going on, was able to expose how much the emergency manager was making, the assistant to her was making, as well as the person that they were flying in here from Georgia was making, and that was running our water department 2 days a week. And they always said that we were broke, but there was enough money that they were utilizing to pay the emergency manager half-time, $150,000 or more. She was working part-time. The city manager that she had, she was making $250,000. And the guy running the water department was making $90,000 for 2 days a week. All the expenses paid and everything. But yet, Highland Park was broke. And yet, giving away our properties over here in Highland Park. And now today, what do we have over here after all those years? And we won and got rid of that emergency manager. They gave us another one. In fact, we are the next one was a person that was key to Highland Park because he was raised in Highland Park. And his father had been mayor in Highland Park, and that's Blackwell. He at least tried to bring Highland Park out of his financial woe that they have put us in. But at the same time, you know, he was walking their music also. And they, I guess after they got tired of him and got rid of him, then they claimed that we no longer needed a financial manager. But at the same time, they still had us under the thumb of the city, of the state. And right now, the young man that's been up there with you, what's his name?
Saunders.
Left from Saunders.
Saunders.
What,
Tony Saunders?
Tom Saunders left here a year and a half ago after turning out, making the decision, along with the mayor here, who is a disgrace, to turn our water, the delivery of our water in Highland Park, over to the city of Detroit to run our water, department, without the decision of city council, without the people in Highland Park knowing about it. And we didn't find out until we turned our water on the day that they transferred our water and ended up with brown and yellow water, and the water wasn't tasting good and all that type of stuff. And we had to fight through the Highland Park Human Rights Coalition, not only for a meeting, but to find out if we even had a contract with the city of Detroit. And how long is this supposed to continue? We never could get any answer, but we did find out we don't have a contract, and it's been now, it will be what, Jen, 2 years almost now? 2 years, and our struggle started this time, Reverend Pinkney, over the fact that the city was not billing us. Now, isn't this something? People in Highland Park was going up there, all of us, saying, when are you going to bill us? What are you trying to do, set us up for takeover, for taking our properties and stuff? And this little mayor up here had been told, now the rumor is in the city, is that Dylan, the treasurer up there, told him, don't bill us. And that's got to come directly from the governor and all of them. It's a conspiracy that is taking place. Don't bill us. Because, you know, if you don't bill, if we don't end up paying our water bill, it's going to be put on our property taxes.
Right.
Well, we're going into 2 years now. And we kept asking the question, point blank to the mayor, when you start billing us, are you going to bill us forward or are you going to bill us retroactively? He said twice to us in a public meeting, we're going forward. We said because it is not our fault that you have not been billing us. Two months later, he came in and said, I have to tell all of you that I can't do that. That is, bill you forward. I have to go back retroactive too. And we said we're not gonna pay. We're gonna have us a escrow account, and we're gonna take some measurements against you because we're being set up for failure. And not only that, you know, we have a financial manager over our school system here now.
Mm-hmm.
No school in Highland Park is a public school no more. All schools are chartered schools, and this chartered the emergency manager over the school system here decided back in June that they needed, along with his board, that they needed more office space up at the high school. Now, this school, high school that was built, several years ago, had a whole third floor with nothing but offices on it. They took the library, the public library. That was one of the only libraries that was left in Highland Park. Our big, beautiful public library was closed under the emergency financial manager with monies that were given to reopen it, and we don't know where the money is now. Now, at the high school, this Witherspoon, Dr. Witherspoon, decided to get rid of the books and threw and burned a lot of the books in the library in Highland Park. Children don't even have books to bring home.
Mm.
And some of those books are historical books to Highland Park. They don't exist nowhere else. So we're in a threefold type of fight over here, not only around water, which you can't live but 3 days without, but at the same time, we over here around properties that are being given away by this mayor and what have you, and abusing the citizens' rights over here, as well as the financial manager that's over the public school that have told the public that he is not a librarian, and the facility where the books were at the high school is not a facility to hold books. So these are some of the attacks on our democratic rights. Our children don't have a right to an education and to be able to have a book. We don't have the right to water and to our properties being snatched. So it's a constantly uphill battle for the benefit of these corporations and for us to be moved and for them to have the range.
Absolutely, absolutely. General, talk a little bit about your emergency manager inside Detroit.
Okay, the emergency manager we had in Detroit came here and began to dismantle this city. Reverend Pickney, what... He upgraded it to bring it this manager in here to declare bankruptcy, and so you got a twofold movement going on. You had the emergency manager that was dismantling everything, that was taking up proposals to sell the Belle Isle, the parks, the waterworks. They were taking all of these other measures. They let the city council and mayor still operate, even though the emergency manager had the reins. But the important factor, Reverend Pickney, was that the Snyder brought in this guy, Kevin Orr, to head up a bankruptcy charges. Now, this bankruptcy, the only reason they had to bring in the bankruptcy charges was because the emergency manager could do everything else. He could sell the properties. He could change the laws. He could eliminate the elected officials. The only thing he couldn't do, he couldn't attack the pension system, and he couldn't attack the retirees' health care benefits because they were protected by the Michigan Constitution. So they had to bring in the bankruptcy law and try to go to federal court. They claim that the federal law trumps state law, and they're using that to attempt to try to go after the pensions of all these workers in Detroit who worked all these years with all these promises of pension pay and all these promises of their health care after they retired to go after that. That is the only reason that we could come up with that they had to go for bankruptcy, because they couldn't do that under the new public act that we got.
Wow.
You know, so,
and you know
that
this guy carried on, you know, him and Snyder went to school together.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah,
that makes
him
sense.
And also Upton was like a big brother to Snyder and Kevin Orr.
Wow.
The U.S. Representative Fred Upton from down here. So, you know,
yeah,
they're
I
all
mean,
connected.
Yeah.
And look,
yeah,
and I know that they're working for them billionaires to try to get all they can get.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, listen, do you have any idea of how we can fight this thing?
Well, we're fighting now, Reverend Pinckney. We got all kind of organizations that stood up to try to fight Reverend Pinckney. The next big step for us is to try to figure out a way to unite ourselves statewide.
Right.
We need
something.
A statewide apparatus, because we got Pontiac, Flint, Muskegon Heights, Harper Woods, Hamtramck has been added. Ecorse, they kind of let them off the handle. Highland Park. All of us got to be united in one big effort around the state to try to defeat this thing.
Absolutely.
We keep
and you know, one thing about Benton Harbor, you know, we are in full support of you and Marion and whatever Detroit need us to do. We plan to do it. But listen, you got about 90 seconds. I'm going to give you 90 seconds to say something. I'm going to give Marion Kramer 90 seconds to say something. And then I got to move on, General. I want to let you know I really, really appreciate you. I think that you and Marion are just two tremendous people. And anything in this world that I could do for you or Marion, you got me.
Okay, I just wanted to say a little slogan we used to use back during the drum days. We used to cry, fight. Fail, fight again, fail again, fight on the final victory. You know?
All right. I like
okay.
that. Mary. Absolutely. That's something we should be using now.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Marion?
I want to say Dorothy and yourself and to the listening audience that you got some fine folks there, great leaders in Benton Harbor. And they've been through hell. But you know what? They constantly, they're the type of fighters and leaders that we need. So, you know, we're here for you, and we're moving now to set up this summit of all the various cities and school districts that have been under an emergency manager. And, you know, you're one of the ones, the first ones that we told about it in the beginning. So we will be on with you and announcing it over your radio station. Okay?
Absolutely, because over 500,000 people by Tuesday will be to hear whatever you and General said, because it's so important that people listen to hear, especially some great leaders like you two. Also, Dorothy told me to ask you, Marion, that she wants you to introduce her October the 5th at the Danny Glover event. So I'm following her orders, because I don't want her to get mad at me.
You know how
okay,
I do whatever Dorothy wants me to do.
Okay.
All right. She wants you to introduce her. So we'll get it all ready just for you. And General, you know you my general now. I don't American get mad at me if she wants to, but I love you some general.
Okay,
I
all
love
right.
you some general. But listen, I'm gonna
love
have to
y'all.
Move on, but thank you so much for being on the show. And
right.
I tell you, it's an honor, you know, just to have you both on here. And I want you to know that me and Dorothy both, we love you both. And we know, I don't know what we do. If you need to call me for any reason, you want me to come, you call me. I promise you I'll be there.
Okay, all right, Reverend Pinckney.
All
right, Dorothy. All
right, and you take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, all right.
It's almost TI time, but I got to bring on Dr. Short right fast. Dr. Short, are you there?
Okay.
All right, then. I'll talk to y'all.
I am here, Reverend.
Dr. Short, are you here?
I time here, Reverend Pinckney. Can you
hear me? How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm blessed and inspired by the last two speakers and inspired by all the people all over the country who are fighting against this war that this antichrist of human rights and constitutionality called Barack Obama is trying to impose on us. And I want to remind people that there are two people, one gone and one very near to us that's not gone. Brother Malcolm Shabazz, who was assassinated May 9th, surely, who was educated in Syria, would have been one of the voices to speak out against this war. How convenient. Remember the day I called you, Reverend Pinckney, that morning, saying something had happened to Malcolm's grandson, and I couldn't prove it. I was in New York. Remember that call?
I remember.
I mean, we talked
about that.
I'm afraid, Reverend Pinckney, that they got this boy. I don't know what happened. Do you realize they timed that? Because no matter what anyone says about that young brother, he would have been a voice. And there's another voice. Lynn Stewart, everything that's been done wrong from the Iraq-Iran war forward, if Lynn Stewart were free today, would be the focal point of no more of these wars. And they're holding her and defying all of us who want to see this woman free, our sister Lynn. And they're insulting the dignity of the American people by holding her and the dignity of the world. And people need to put these pieces together, that we're all in this in a universal struggle for the dignity and humanity and righteousness of the human race against those monsters, those satanic, plutocratic, vicious forces that would like for all of us to either be dead or slaves. We cannot ignore that. They could not let Lynn Stewart go with this, and we need to lean around anyway. And we need to remember, most people do not know that Malcolm Shabazz had studied an entire year in Syria, knew the people in Syria. Imagine just a little bit of what he would have been able to say or do right now as we're speaking. These things that happen, city managers, these strange weather patterns, the targeted individuals, the whole human race is targeted by these pigs, and we've got to fight them, and we've got to fight them with understanding and with unity and with the right heart and spirit to build community amongst one another, where we're not fighting over what we look like or where we live or what we're doing privately, but we have our eyes focused in on the ultimate liberation of humanity from those who enslave us all. I hope you with me on that.
And I'm with you, my brother. I understand everything you're saying. And you know, you really hit the nail right on the head. See, we have to stand up for people. See, that's something that we have lost at. We used to stand up for everybody. Now we don't stand up. We don't even stand up for ourselves no more.
That's right.
You know, and you know, the talk should be, when we think about Malcolm and we think about Lynn Stewart and stuff like that, you know, there should be 1 million people out marching right now. You know,
right.
You can get folks, even for the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King. They only had 200,000. The other 100,000 was Homeland Security. You know,
there weren't that many people. I'm up here. Let me tell you something. I live in D.C. D.C. is built on a swamp. It's full of rats and mice. I haven't even seen rats since they were talking about having that march. I haven't seen a rat in weeks. They didn't even want to be around this park on Washington. This insult to the people who were just on the phone from the revolutionary movements, labor movements up in Michigan and all the others. I mean, the first march on Washington was for jobs and freedom, the one in 1963. Didn't hear these people talking about no jobs, and they certainly weren't talking about any freedom. And look at how Obama, who claims to be the heir of Malcolm X and yet hasn't even said sorry about this boy being killed, hasn't even had the United States Department of State is required by international law to investigate whenever an American citizen dies in a foreign country, and they haven't investigated what happened to Malcolm's grandson. And yet this buffoon, this pathological liar, this switch-eating crook and sociopath has done nothing to enforce the law. Then he claims to be Martin Luther King's heir, and yet Martin Luther King was a pacifist. He gets all these people together and then starts a war. He keeps insulting the stupid
African-American
people
what he is.
Who are worshiping color when we should be looking at content. You know, my favorite recent candidate for president was Governor Bradley of New Jersey. Love him or hate him, he was a man that wanted to reach out to everybody and could care less whether he was elected or not. He made a point, and I knew he'd never get far in the electoral process. He said, I'm against racism. And if I'm your president and you want to get to me, show me how we bring people together. If you don't care about ending discrimination against different people, I'm not feeling you. And he should have been our president, but he and a white man, a great white man, like your John Brown, like the one who sends me all these great emails. I will rally behind, I don't care what you look like. If you're for justice, if you're for peace, if you're for a fair wage for everyone. By the way, I did an interview, Reverend Pinckney, on Press TV. I don't think they put it online because I asked the question, why wasn't Obama on the picket line with the 200,000 people who protested this last week or more? For the 500,000 people who protested, who asked, why can't they have $15 an hour? Why are our hamburger flippers, who are now all ages, cursed to a wage where they're on welfare and Medicaid and all sorts of government and state support when they work 40-hour weeks? It's a monstrous thing. It is a wicked thing that we have our backs turned on those people who are working, who are doing the work that they say blacks won't do anymore. And yet they're being paid the same amount of money in McDonald's. Adjusted for inflation, they're paid less than what I was paid 33 years ago. Now, everybody knows in the last 33 years, everything's gone up. Why was I making $6.50, $7 in 1981, and people are working for $7.50 and $8.50 right now? And we don't see the human. There should have been someone from the SEIU. And why did this so-called farce on Washington did not allow the Honorable Louis Farrakhan to be there, did not allow any young people to speak? Our movement's been hijacked, and you know what I call it? I call it the horonation of Al Sharpton. And I didn't say coronation. I said horonation.
Those are your exact words, and those are what you're saying. Listen, I can't give you no more than 90 more seconds. I got to go to my T-ad. So listen, you got 90 seconds to say whatever you want, and then it's T-ad time. It got to be, my T-ad's got to come on because I know they're itching in their pants. They want to know when is their time. But listen, take your 90 seconds and say whatever you want.
My 90 seconds, sisters and brothers, if we take the scriptures right where when God truly comes to this earth, people will beat their swords into plowshares, then we all need to be against this war in Syria, which will be a war against Iran and Eritrea and then Zimbabwe and Venezuela and ultimately a prison planet for Americans. Oppose the war. Honor Dr. King. Remember my father who died on September 9th. I imagine how I feel that they are going to be talking about war on the day my father died, a victim of 9/11. Let's have peace and justice and love. No war. Just say no to Obama and Obamaism. God bless you.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Short. I really appreciate you. And listen, you're right. We got to say no to the war in Syria because whether they like it or not. And here's another thing. When they mention war, the cost of gas automatically goes up. If anybody knows in that is crucial, but I say no to war. But listen, it's T.I. time.
Just in time for winter.
That's right, absolutely. T.I. time, it's T.I. time. It's time for my T.I.s now. It's time for us to take this thing to a whole different level. It's time to bring on the one and only. You heard of John Brown. You heard him. You heard that name before. You hear people talking about John Brown, but we got our very own John Brown, a man who stands for what's right. He stands for the people, and he's a T.I. who loves his T.I. John Brown, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, Reverend Pinkney. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. And I tell you, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show again. And I was saying you probably itching and say, well, when is the TI time? TI got to have a time too. These target individuals got to have their time too. So Ken, tell us what you want to say.
Well, I think most Americans are TIs. They just don't know it yet because they're not getting the torture that there's a difference in the TIs, the ones that know and the ones that don't know. So most people don't know it yet, but they are TIs, and they think that that it ain't happened to them, but it is happening to everybody. When they're spying on everybody, they're using this against the Congress and the senators and everybody. So what we need to do, we need to go up to Washington and get all the crazies out. They're believing in all these wars. And when it comes time, most of the people don't believe it. They'll have no problem killing millions of Americans. How can we believe anything they say? We went into Vietnam on a lie. We went to Afghanistan on a lie. We went to Syria. All of it's a lie. So how can you believe anything they say now?
Everybody, you can't. They don't even have any credibility no more.
No, none whatsoever. Once somebody lies to you, then you can't believe them after that.
Absolutely. 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 You are 100% correct. And I know you guys got a TI story to tell me or something. Let's hear what you got to say today.
Well, in South Carolina, they was having a march against the war, and a policeman came out and told them they had to have a permit. They told him, no, we don't have to have a permit. He said, well, if somebody complains, then I'll come and I got to arrest you or you got to leave. When did somebody complain about Reverend Pinkney that you don't have your First Amendment rights? So you tell me we're not into a police state. We're in a police state right now.
Oh, absolutely, because they have put police officers in our schools here in Benton Harbor. It's just really one of those situations where the people would have to take a stand. If you don't take a stand, and listen to me, tell the TIs this, your issue is important, but you need to join all the other issues that's going on in the country. If you don't do that, you're going to stay small, you're going to stay separated. And you know
exactly.
What, Dave? Hey, Ken, you know what? I've had probably about, I would say, maybe 30 TIs to call me within the last week. I've really been busy, but they leave messages, and you know what they want? They say, we want you to have your show again. I say, well, I am, but I can't have it right now because I'm so busy with this dinner in October, on October the 5th. So I say, I'm really, and then I got to do my normal work, and it's just beginning to get overbearing, you know. But also, Ken, if my TIs want to put that letter in my book, they got to give me that letter within 2 days because we're going to the press in 2 days. So if they want the letter in there, they got to get me the letter. I'm willing to put it in there, but they got to send me the money and the letter.
Okay.
So go ahead, Ken.
I'll make that plain to them. You know, in this country and around the world, millions of people have perished from lack of knowledge. And most people don't even want to get the knowledge. They just want to sit back and wait for somebody else to get it. I heard a lady say the other day that Alex Jones is interviewing, well, you got to give up your liberty for freedom. To me, that's double talk. I thought liberty and freedom was one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it's the difference, but I guess that's what they teach them in the schools nowadays. That liberty is different than freedom. I think it's the same word.
Well, you know what? When you talk about the schools, they don't teach you anything in the school unless you're going to one of them private schools. They
exactly.
don't need to educate you no more. They don't need you out here, none of these factory workers and stuff like that. You know, it's all about the billionaires. All about how much profit they can get. So we got to stay focused and do what we need to do.
Well, you know, this trip, I went to Pennsylvania again. I had lunch with the chief of police down there Wednesday. And I walked, when I was going to the service station, first thing I asked the girl or the guy, I say, how's this economy treating you? Oh, they don't know what they're doing. I said, no, honey, you got that wrong. They know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to bankrupt this country and put us all in FEMA camps. And some of them want to know what about stuff I got right on my car. I go out and get them DVDs and go ahead and give it to them. I tell them, when you get through with them, pass them around. I said, if you don't wake up for long, you're going to be in those FEMA camps. And some of them actually told me they'd never heard of the FEMA camp.
Wow, and you know what? I believe that, too. People are sleeping. They're not conscious of what's going on around them. They're sleeping.
But I do find out going across the country that a lot of people are waking up to what's going on against this government. I mean, they can't wait to start bombing Libya. Syria, I mean, they've already destructed Libya. That's history. But you look at it, and this administration and these globalists that actually runs the world, they don't mind going to Libya and killing millions. They didn't mind killing millions in Vietnam. They don't mind killing millions. Any war we get, we kill millions. And the American people, when it comes time, they will kill you too. They
absolutely
have no problem.
Everybody kills.
They have no problem.
Everybody is expendable. Everybody. Even the president. Everybody is expendable.
Well, if he gets where they don't need him, they'll get rid of him too.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. No question about it. He's just like you and I. You know, when they don't need him no more, they will move on him. And they will do that. Ken, you got about 90 seconds. I got to bring on Gloria. Go right ahead.
Go ahead, Reverend Pinkney. I've said about all I can say. We need to go to insane asylums and get all the people out and take them and wash them and let them run this country.
Oh, absolutely. We need to do something. We need to do it right away. I know the feel. I know what you're thinking. And I tell you, we have to do something. We got to continue fighting back, though. We can't lay down and go to sleep. Ken, I got to move on. Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinkney.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm doing well. All right.
It's not too hot for you, is it?
No, I try not to get into that because that's a natural thing. That's universal. So
hey,
you
I like
have to
that.
Go with the universal law, yes.
You like me, I don't
that.
Care how hot it is. I don't even care how cold it is. Just so
no.
I have some weather.
I'm a
universal. That's all I care
being.
About. Gloria, I know you got something good to tell me. I gotta bring you on, then I gotta bring on my good friend Dorothy. And we got a couple other people on here that are gonna say a few words today, but you're in total control. Go right ahead.
All right. I'm gonna read today from a gentleman's book. It's called The Invisible Crime. And it's by Michael S. Bell. It's a true story about illegal microchip implants and microwave technology and their use against humanity. Okay. What happens when a typical upper-middle-class man from a respectable American family becomes the target of a covert organization bent on controlling both mind and body? When the secret organization is armed with high-tech weaponry, which includes microchip technology aimed at controlling the minds and actions of its victims, terror reigns. In this chilling true life account, writer Michael Fitzhall Bell is drugged, abducted, and when he speaks of being abducted, that means he was removed from his home, raped, and surgically implanted with microchips, tracked, and tortured. Michael's predators can even read his thoughts. In this battle of man versus technology turned against us, Michael must prove his case to the police before the attackers not only eliminate Michael's memory, but eliminate Michael. From the terror of being electronically stalked to the horror of surgical microwave chip implants and mind control, Michael Bell's experiences as a victim will leave you shocked and amazed. His uphill battle with doctors, lawyers, police, government, FBI, CIA, and a secret criminal underworld begins in Hollywood, races into and through the North Carolina backwoods, and then back to California. As you experience Michael's journey on each horrific page, you will see actual medical photos, x-rays, ultrasound, and MRI images, all showing non-therapeutic tracking and torture devices. These instruments and tools are available to anyone on the internet, including criminal organizations like those which targeted Michael Bell. His battle for survival continues today as you are prepared, and you better be prepared. And my overall thing on this, Reverend Pinkney, is every TI that is listening, I know they can relate to one of the words that I have said, such as drugging, abducted, raped, surgically implanted with microchips, electronically stalked, tracked, tortured, mind control. They have problems with doctors, lawyers, police, government, FBI, CIA. So thank you for listening.
Let me ask you a question, Gloria. Now, when we talk about the TIs, last week I got a call after we got off the show. And the guy, what he wanted to know, I told him he could go to the internet and to find out more about the TIs, I said target individual. He said, this were his words. He said that he probably been targeted by the government for the last 25 years and didn't even know it. Is that possible?
Yes, that's very possible. You know, Reverend Pinkney, when this first happened, I don't know about anyone else, but I know for myself personally, you feel ashamed. You feel alone. You feel isolated. So it's not something that, hey, this is what's going on with me, because you know no one is going to believe you, or they're going to put on your paper, oh, she has a delusional disorder, which there's no such term as a delusional disorder. But anywho, you know that's what they're going to do. So for many years, people live in this terror and fear. And I was just blessed to come to freedom. I read a book. I begged my son, please, before you leave to go to California, help me find out what this is. I don't even know what to say. And he did. We found a book by Dr. John Hall, and it's called A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. I read the book in about 2 days, and at the end of the book, there was Freedom's web number. There was the web page and the phone number. So I call the number. And the first thing they say, which takes a big sigh of relief off of you, is you are not alone.
And Gloria, you know, one thing that I have found since I've been really actually dealing with the TIs is that, you know, I think it's over a million TIs in this country or more. And one of the things that, you know, I like to get feedback after the show is over. And the guy, he was, you know, he was serious. He was like, wow, you know, you actually allowing people to come on your radio show and talk about this. I said, absolutely. I said, they should be talking about it on every radio show, you know, because it's happening whether you like it or not. So I think we got somebody who I think they're coming around slowly but surely. I think that they believe now that what we've been saying probably for the last 6 or 7 months is true. It's no longer a fairy tale as some would like to think. And especially, I remember when Dorothy was talking about what the Army was doing and how they sexually harassed not only her but other women. And there was a young lady that got killed. And we got validity behind that because they started talking about it on TV, the radio, and every place else, the newspaper, that it was happening. So slowly but surely, we're getting people to understand that this is happening. And like I told them last week, there's over 1 million people that has been targeted by this government. And look, we have went over the 500,000 mark, so I know there's a 500,000 people listening by Tuesday. I don't know whether they're actually listening today, but by Tuesday they would have tuned in at least to the broadcast itself, whichever way they do it. So that's a good thing. That's showing people what we're capable of. I'm talking about people all over the world. I'm not talking about just here in the United States. I'm talking about in South America, London, Tokyo, every place. They're listening. And they're hearing what you're saying, Gloria, because my heart is going out to y'all. And I've made a pledge that we're going to fight together, and I'm going to fight this thing. And I'm not going to let people stop me. And I know what they do.
Well,
they won't stop me, Gloria.
No, well, they won't stop me either, Reverend Pinckney, because I have 4 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be darned if I'm going to have them live this type of life that I'm going through. So they have tortured me every day. They can only kill me once.
That's right.
And
you
that
know what?
Won't be until the time the Creator comes for me. So that I'm not even worried about. But Reverend Pinckney, what is starting to happen, this EMF, electromagnetic field, they're going into the schools with these Wi-Fis, and they're finding some of the children are getting sick. And I happened to tune into this webpage the other day, and they had these 2 doctors on. And I kept listening to the doctors, but they never said anything. And then when they finally gave me a turn after pushing my button 100 times, they said, oh, here's Gloria. So I said, this stems from the medical community. Big pharmaceutical corporations, what do they care? They said the little girl, well, we're going to measure to see where she can sit because not every place is as hot with this Wi-Fi. So they called the mother up the next day and said there's no place in here she can sit because the entire school is covered in this Wi-Fi. So
wow.
How many cancers,
you know that?
They don't care about the cancers that the children will develop.
Yeah,
they just
and
don't care.
Let me say this too. These hospitals, these doctors, they're all working with these people against the people. You know,
yes,
a lot of times we say, well, you go to the doctor to get well. Well, the doctors, they no longer try to get you well anymore. You know,
no.
After basically, like in the old days, like in the South, most of the mothers knew what to do for their children. We have to go back to that. And here's another thing that it's not TI, but it's something that we have to start taking care of our community. We have to start opening up these stores, these mama-papa stores. We got to take this thing to a whole different level, Gloria, and we got to fight back. Whatever the issue is, people need to start standing up, fighting back, saying they're not going to take this crap no more. We had enough. And the governor listening, he should listen because we're about fed up with him. We're about fed up with what they're doing, and we need to do something. Gloria, you got 90 seconds. Say what you need to say, and I got to bring on Dorothy.
Well, in the words of John Lewis, the only one that I really appreciated in that march was stand up, speak out, and get in the way and make some noise. And that's how we'll make a change. But
oh,
to hover
right. I don't think we
you
can say anything better than that. That is tremendous, you know. And my word to everybody else, keep your money in your pocket. Don't spend your money with these people. If you want to hurt them, you hurt them in the pocket because they want you to spend every dollar you got. And my word is boycott, boycott, boycott. Boycott everything. I don't care what it is. Just boycott. All right, now. I tell you, I'm going to have to move on, Gloria. I want you to know we love you. And you keep up the good work. Dorothy, my dear friend.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
I'm good. I'm going to jump right into it.
Well, you know how to say jump on in, Dorothy.
Yes, sir. Okay. YouTube video, Illuminati sellouts exposed. what's interesting about this video is it has Aleister Crowley. Now, Aleister Crowley was the head of the Satanist movement back in the day, and he's actually doing his little triangle. But and that's at Mark 24 minutes, 28 seconds. If you go to 24 minutes and 9 seconds, you will see Reverend Al Sharpton doing the same Illuminati triangle at 24 minutes and 9 seconds. Okay?
Is that right?
And, yes, sir. And you will see multiple people throughout this system, very, very impressive people, very, you know, sports figures, music figures, because, again, if you won't go along with this system, then you don't get to do what you want to do. And one of the people, and again, please know that whoever I mention, any organization I mention or anything else, there are good people in these systems. There are naive people who don't know anything about this because they have a moral belief system grounded in if somebody loses $20, they give it right back to them. Whereas these people, if $20 fall out of the back pocket of somebody, they would steal it and never tell them. That's their mentality. So they actually operate below the letter of the law, both as attorneys and specialists, and this is what they do. They operate below the letter of the law, therefore it is not breaking the law. They found the new schemes, the new means of scams and stuff like that, and they keep collapsing the government. Now, this is how they're doing it. And one of the ways that would absolutely stop it in this country at every level, so begin, everybody who's listening, begin to tell your senators and congressmen, we want every industry to sign an ethics clause. And that ethics clause is that they will not rip people off and find loopholes to rip people off, take their property, take their money, or take anything else. And every company in America, every employer, every business owner, every fiscal responsible, fiscally, the CEOs or CFOs, the financial officers, the legal industry of every company should be signing this to not allow for the undermining of our government, because that's how they're doing this. And it's not illegal. That's why Congress cannot act, because they're not acting to stop it, because they're not breaking the laws. But this has been well planned for not just 50 years, 100 years, but thousands of years. This has been an ongoing, forward-moving program and process. And their entire intent is that they will have their piece. Their piece of P-I-E-C-E, as well as P-E-A-C-E. The problem is that this is probably, based on what I've seen, a very white supremacist, neo-Nazi level of abuse. And while there are those from every religion and organization and culture that has sold themselves out for profits, for getting to the top, the sad thing is, when has people who have hated other people based on their color or their religion, when have they ever not gone back on their word historically and killed those who've sold out and have helped them get what they want? This is what they're doing. And so many of these people who are going along to get along so that they're not having their loved ones or their families killed, hurt, or harmed. Even a lot of our politicians, you go backwards, begin looking at your politicians who have lost children to leukemia, to other things. If you go to Barry Trower, Dr. Barry Trower, who's an MI6 scientist, military intelligence in the United Kingdom on YouTube, he talks about pulse weapons that are giving leukemia to people. Folks, even our politicians have been hit, and they know it, and they're not doing anything because they're in so much fear that they would rather be able to go forward than not do anything. So I don't think it's happenstance that we have diseases that in the old archives of the Egyptians, Now, the Egyptians were not stupid people if you begin looking at the large monuments that they put together. They are not an ignorant people, given that they were able to do mummification. That's a highly intelligent people of an African, typically dark-complected persons. So they're not stupid. So why don't we have all this issues of the diseases? Why don't we have, you know, all these modern cancers or anything else that they're talking about in their archives and stuff? It's most likely because these have been created to cause people to simply leave the planet prematurely. And what I'm saying is, again, this is all indicated based on how and where these things have tracked. If you go back and you reverse engineer all your understanding, you'll begin to see a huge disconnect of information. And we've been told it. We've been sold a huge bill of goods, which is wrong. And that wrongness is now costing not only our lives to be eradicated early, and please know there are a great many people who are being gone after. And yes, could the young man who said that he's been gone after for 25 years and didn't even know it? If you, again, look at, if you've had failed relationships, if you've never met anybody except people that brutalized you and undermined you, and even though you have education and you applied and worked hard, there is no possibility in this world, when you have good, ethical, honest systems in place, that you could not have succeeded. That was because either something happened in your parents or grandparents who they would not go along with these evil systems, so they punished the children. And the children didn't even know. I've had to go back and track the fact that my mother would not be a white racist. She refused to believe and abuse people because the color of their skin, because it's very contrary to what Jesus Christ or any of the other great spiritual leaders would ever allow on this planet. And yet what these people do is they teach it, train it, and allow it. And so if you're not willing to be one of them, then they're going to go against you and brutalize you. And then what they're ultimately doing is they're setting up for a huge race war, a religious war, a financial war. That's part of their entire undermining plan. So, sadly, a great many of our spiritual leaders, not everyone, please know, but too many of them have allowed for the rape and brutalization of children, have allowed for the undermining and the sustaining that only women get paid at 77 cents on a dollar to the men doing the same exact job. It has literally been a spinning top that they keep changing the plan without any true change. And their plan, the criminals' plan, is to play one end against the other to those in the middle. So begin to pay attention to what they're trying to recommend, and let us begin to use our brains. We really do need to say we want an ethical contract that if you are a criminal operating in your state, at your local level, get out, because you have not only taken taxpayers' money, they have typically put it in their pockets, or they have given it to their relatives. And this is at the state, federal, and local level, because please know, I've worked at almost every one of these levels, and I've seen this firsthand. And I stood up against it, and I said, you can't do this based on the writing that was set in the contracts, based on your job description. Nobody cared. I got fired, because the mentality is, get yours now, and everybody who won't participate in it loses out.
So what you said, they don't even honor contracts anymore.
No, they don't. Well, look at the treaties. A treaty for Native Americans are, in fact, contracts. Not one has ever been honored. They don't have fresh water on those reservations, and many of them were marched to their deaths and murdered, when, in fact, after they were used to find out where the gold, the silver, and all the other prime lands in this country were. So these are the same participants doing the exact same game. They're just now brutalizing groups of people after each other. And let's even go back to the schools. My question is, where were the police when these children were being brutalized in school to the point of a whole bunch of these young kids were committing suicide because of the level of bullying? Where were the police when those kind of abuses were happening to stop this thing? We used to have police that go in and say the DARE program. I would dare to say that while there are good police, what we're now seeing and what I've seen, having been trained in law enforcement, is there is a level of militarization in which we are seeing that kids are being, with this Wi-Fi, and Gloria is absolutely right, the Wi-Fi is pulse radiation, pulse energy, that by Dr. Barry Trowers, who is, again, he's in his 70s, and he's been a scientist for the United Kingdom military intelligence, in which he has said the pulse radiation is increasing the agitation, the aggression, and even diseases. If you have children that are surrounded by Wi-Fi in those schools and they're under stress, you are going to have children losing it in the schools as well as teachers compounding each other, and then you have armed people. And those police and their radios, again, Dr. Barry Trower was talking about how even the police are being subjected to those pulsing information that is increasing their agitation. You are asking for nothing but a tragedy. And that, if it happens anywhere in America, then please know this was set up to happen. Especially given that bullying, sexual abuse, neurolinguistic programming has come into the school since 1995 under the Troops to Teachers program. And there is an unknown number of those troops who came out of the United States military as sexual abusers. It was hidden. It was kept from ever being known.
Wow, that's amazing, I tell you. And by you being in the Army, serving in the Army,
Air Force.
I say,
in the military.
It's so incredible. And the best part about it all can be verified, and I think that's a good thing. And, you know, you take this stuff to a whole different level. I really appreciate you, Dorothy. I appreciate you coming on and saying what you say. But listen, you got about 90 seconds, and I got to bring on my good friend Stacy after that. But go ahead and tell us something else you want us to know.
Just as a reference point, go on YouTube, put in Greenan Commons. This is 1980s. This is in the United Kingdom. There were women that were protesting, civilians protesting, missiles in U.S. military bases. I was in Europe at that time. And the government used pulse weapons on them to get them sick, to cause various types of tumors and such like that. But this is what was being used on civilians who, by their own country's laws, were allowed to protest.
Mm-hmm.
So please know.
That pulse give you cancer also?
According to Barry Trower, it has a great many things that it can do. Cell phones. That's why he suggests that if you have a cell phone, you need to have it with an earplug, an earpiece with a long string attached, not the Bluetooth, because that's still pulse energy and it's right up next to your head. He said putting that next to a child's head for 2 minutes would cause disruption of the brain logical functioning for 20 minutes. That is on a child. So if you're talking people on the phone, yes, it is.
Wow, that's
incredibly
amazing.
Dangerous. And then even the pulse energy is not even standardized. Again, think of any type of equipment that you had that used to have some level of safety protection around it, and they would tell you what your standard is. For instance, the car. You can't typically drive it over 75 miles an hour. But think of the pulse energy as if it's your car, and they say, hey, by the way, you can drive as fast as you want. And nobody knows that there is no boundaries to the pulse energy of the equipment. That's your Wi-Fi, that's your computers, that's your, you know, different modems and stuff. All this is causing an increased agitation, and it is both in a piece of equipment into your house and out of your house. So become aware of it.
That is truly remarkable. I know I'm going to get a lot of calls on this today, and I am bracing myself for it because I tell you, Dorothy, that information you just gave is so tremendous that, and I hope people look it up. Go on the internet and look it up and see exactly what Dorothy is saying, because Dorothy, she normally don't say anything unless she has evidence to support it. Dorothy, I got to move on. But thank you so much for that information. I want you to know that we love you here in Benton Harbor. And listen, let's talk soon.
Yes, sir.
All right. Stacy from Benton Harbor, Michigan. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing today?
Real?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. It was good to see you yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you made my day. I was looking forward to seeing you. And you know what we're going to do for your grandfather? We're going to get a statue built for him. And I'm going to need y'all help because it's going to be a fight. Them demons are going to, you know, they start lining up them preachers, and they're going to do everything they can not to. But we, you know, we get the numbers together, we can do a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. You know,
Absolutely. Because I know you got something that you want to talk about today. Where should we begin?
We begin with our children first.
Okay, let's start there.
Okay. First, we need to go back to the original, whooping them, for real, because it's a lot of parents scared of their children.
Yeah.
They are scared of their, I'm saying, they act like they.
You use the term whooping, we don't mean beat them, right? We just say give them a whooping.
They need a beating first.
Uh-oh. I don't know. I'm going to get a lot of calls on this one. Go ahead, Stacy.
You know how they act. You know how they act around the hood, man. It's a shame. We came up and, you know, sorry to say, we did a lot of things, you know, that influenced little children looking up, wanting to be like this guy in that car going down the street or, you know, something like that. But we got beat, too. I mean, it was whoopings. We, you know, I'm saying this generation needs the beating first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then get the whooping. Okay, we didn't want our parents to know half the things we were doing. So we were hiding. You know, it was all fun and game when we didn't even want the woman down the street to see us.
Mm-hmm.
Because she would call.
Absolutely.
Know, and boy, you didn't want that call. But really, actually, what I want to talk about today is everybody getting their status correct. And what I mean by status correct, I don't want to take anything away from Black Power. I don't want to take anything away from the civil rights, you know, as a people that we went through to get us to where we are today. But it's a very big trick there. Like, it's been many tricks. You know, you could walk up and down the street and you see black and white people. But me, I walk up and down the street and I know half of those black or white people, none of them know who they really are. And I'm speaking nationality. So that stuff there, if you was to go and look under a lot of earlier laws that was in place, everybody was nationals. They knew where they come from, they knew who they were, and their background. Now, it's like, it's the opposite of that. You know, everybody is U.S. citizens. You know, everybody has a lot to pay out and dish out because of these services that you're really not getting. You know, and really, I don't understand it. I understand how to get away from it and stay away from it. But as far as it's just a lot. I'm gone for a week.
Yeah, I know, and you know what? You know some of the things. You know, well, I think what the mistake is, we stop actually telling our children. You know, our children now try to tell us. Well, my children don't, but I know that's what children do now. Parents don't tell their children anymore. Their children tell them. And I think that's the biggest thing, though. It's a reversal of the role. I'm talking about in the black community. I see kids, you know, telling their mama what they're not gonna do, telling I'm not gonna do that. And I know I would never ever tell my mother, father what I'm not gonna do. You know, even if I wasn't planning on doing it, I wouldn't tell him or her. You know, but nowadays they're so bold, they just do it. So, you know, discipline is definitely is in order, and I know that it has to be something need to be done. But also, you're working on a program. I got about, you know what, I'm going to have you come back on next week, and I want you to talk about the program and some of the things you're doing with the Social Security and all this other stuff. I want people to hear you talk about that. That's what I want you to talk about. I want people to get an education on that so they can understand exactly where you know what it's all about. But listen, you got about 90 seconds. I'm going to let you say whatever you want to say, and then I got to bring on my good friend Roz. So, but next week, I want you to be ready for me.
Okay.
All right, but good. You got 90 seconds. You got something you want the people to know? Just say it. You got 500,000 people listening to you.
Okay. Okay, well, first I'd like to clear up. It's clearing it up, but it is not dismissing what I said, okay, about the beating with your children. Because I would rather beat my children than to see a police officer out there beating one of my children, you know. That's why I say that, you know. And the way I was raised, you know, is I was scared to let the ones that was respected, the older, the elders.
Yeah, and like your granddad. Your granddad, yeah, that's for him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want him to get me, but
yeah. Absolutely not. And you know, your granddad is somebody real special too. He's a true hero and a real soldier. And I got a lot of love and respect for him. A lot of love, I tell you. And I won't let nobody mistreat him.
Oh yeah, and he gave me a big pat on the back with the things I'm doing, but he says he kind of scared for me. Now,
yeah.
I asked him about that fear, you know, and he say, you know, because you never know if you say the right thing at the wrong time.
Well, you know, he's mostly from that old school, and they got a different philosophy, but he was a guy who was out there. When there was a issue in the community and an issue at the jail, your granddad was there. He was always there, and I really appreciate him. He's going to, when we have you know Danny Glover is coming to town, and your granddad going to be there. I want you to be there, too. So make plans to be there. Ask your granddad and your grandma about it so you get some more details about it, because I want you to be there October the 5th, you and your wife.
Okay, I will.
All right, and don't forget, I'm going to be looking, but next week I want you to get into some of that serious stuff.
Okay.
All right, my brother. Hey, don't leave me. Hang on. We got a few more minutes, so just hang on and listen, and you know, find out what we talk about. Roz, are you there?
I'm here, and I'm totally blessed to be here. I'm praising the Lord. I know it's hot. I don't feel that great, but all of us, the Lord gave me a verse today, Proverbs 31:9, that each of us have to get up and speak up and stand up for what is right. And the poor and needy, we are in a war zone. This president is arrogant, and I've said he was stupid before, and he is. He wants to lead us into the Third World War. There isn't jobs for people here. This country is a mess. Our foreign relations are just a mess, too. And he went off to play golf today. Thank God he didn't do anything like he usually does, nothing.
Absolutely. I'm glad that he didn't go there and do any bombing. That's what I'm happy about. But you know one thing? Every time they mention bombing, you know, the gas go up. And people need to understand how important this thing is. We just don't get it, Roz. people just don't get it. They don't understand exactly what's going on around them. And I tell you, there's a lot of information out here that we need to come together and fight this thing together, and we can win. We can win these battles. And it's crucial, Rod, and I know that you've been through quite a bit yourself, and especially by being a school teacher, and I know that you saw it on all ends. But our dear president, somebody better tell him, do not give that order. Because
right.
I tell you, if they do, the Russians and the Red Chinese are not very happy with that. They've already spoke out about it, and I think that this might be the time that they get angry enough maybe to start putting troops over there, too, to fight against the United States.
Right. It's close to the Third World War. Obama had the sequester, so he cut back on the military. He's cut back on everything, but he hired people for the IRS to look into our health records. I mean, it's just so disgusting what's going on. Last week, when I wasn't with you, I was at Brad Sherman's town hall meeting here in the Valley. I understand I brought down the house. As the Lord would have it, I was the last number picked to ask a question. And you know I've been very upset about Benghazi, how the president let them die. Well, Brad Sherman said, well, we can't get to every threat. We can't get to every threat. That means all of us in America. I said they were begging for help. In America, we are all begging for help. We're begging for jobs, no matter what our economic status is. All of us, we're begging for better schools for our children. They can't get to us, but they can get to all these other stupid things that they want to. And we need to stand up. They've got Common Core in the schools that they want to do. That is just going to dummy down the students. As Dorothy was talking about, all these electrical things going on that's making everybody sick. We could have the Third World War here. The football season started, everybody. It's the Jewish holidays. It's just disgusting what President Obama wants to do. We must speak up to save this country. I love this country, whether how good or bad we are. We have more things than anybody else. I've lived all over the world. I don't want this Russian type of living as the president wants us to have. We're in food lines. I don't want that. I want us, each one of us, to get together and help each other, grab our arms together, no matter what color we are, what religion, and we need to come together. We need to stand firm and help one another and speak up. No one's going to help us except ourselves. Ourselves united with the other people that care about our children and our future.
Absolutely, absolutely. You hit the nail right on the head. I tell you, but we have to stand together. We must stand together. You know, and all of the listeners out there, I want you to know that this is it. We need to stand together. My goal is to have 1 million people listening to our program by the end of the year. We're halfway there. And I think that this is going to show people what we are capable of doing. We got people who are listening and not doing anything. We got to change the way we do business. And my words are boycott, boycott, boycott. Keep your money in your pocket. When we learn to keep our money in our pocket, we will actually neutralize some of the gold, and think about the gas prices that keep rising. Every time they say you're going to bomb somewhere, the gas price automatically goes up. They don't care whether you're going to bomb or not. The gas prices automatically goes up. When are people going to wise up and stop these people? It's more of us than them. It's time that we take control of this country and stop allowing them to push us around and kick us around like old shoes. I have had enough of this. Matter of fact, Rod, I'm going to have to confess, it's time that we move to a whole different level. We got to show them. We got to make them put up or shut up, and this is what we got to do. We got to get out here and do things that need to be done. And I tell you, Rod, I only got a few more seconds left, but I'm going to give you 30 of those to say the final words. You go right ahead.
Okay, I have on iPetition, a petition, California Governor Brown, reconsider Roslyn Rossi Press's workers' comp death sentence. I need everybody signing it. If we have a 500,000 people, I need that. Governor Brown is the only one that can give me back my benefits. Judge Gerald Cohn and Dr. John Stahlberg lied, as the evidence shows, to lower my rating, medical rating, and deny my benefits. All of us, on everybody's case, we need to pray to the Lord that we don't have this work, because we already told the enemy to change this up. The enemy, what we're going to do. I've never heard of anything so crazy. We all need to educate each other with our gifts and our talents, as I've said for weeks. And all of you that really have a heart, we need to help you with the soldiers, the veterans, all of us, to help us build up our communities, stop the killing, and stop the hatred.
Already. All right, Roz, you have said a mouthful, but I got to move on. And I
tell you, all.
Hey, you take care of that. Ralph, you got the final word today.
Yes, well,
Ralph.
I've been listening, and so much has been said. And I will just join Roz in saying, and yourself in saying, that we must have ways to make our views and opinions known. And while we're saving people, I would like people to go to the website and look up lynnstewart.org and make those three phone calls continuously. Make them understand that we're not interested in attacking Syria or any other country that does not threaten America. And understand that whatever they say has been a lie, and it's likely to continue. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney, for the encouragement. And I do look so forward to, I was talking to Lynn today and saying, maybe we'll make it out to Benton Harbor.
I will be looking forward to that. That would be so tremendous. I tell you, if you came out here, I'll get thousands of people to be here just to hear you talk, just to hear Lynn talk. I think that is off the chain, Ralph. You have just made my day. You have made the show today. You have really said it there. I am so proud. But remember this, that my famous words is boycott. Boycott, boycott, boycott Whirlpool, boycott everything in Florida. Keep your money in your pocket. And on that note, we have just ran out of time. Let's listen to a little music, and we will be back next week, same time, same station. Please be there. Thank you for listening, and I want to thank all my listeners for listening, thinking this show is worthy to be listened to. Thank you so much.